Agricultural programming is made possible by Bunge North America in Danville. Bunge recognizes the importance of agricultural production to our society and economy and the role producers and processors play in providing food and feed to the world.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's September the 5th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's out of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. In agricultural news, Japanese officials are satisfied U.S. feed grains are clean of an unapproved genetic modification. The United States has blocked a WTO request by Brazil. And just when you thought the Doha round of the WTO had ended, there's talk of a revival. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, I know you've seen it in print and not from the U of I, because I have. But are the numbers you're hearing about the U of I's Herculex, YieldGuard, soil insecticide results the whole picture? Maybe. But then again, maybe not. I'll have the straight scoop from entomologist Mike Gray. And just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. September wheat at 404, up 2.75. December futures at 422, 2.5 cents higher. September corn futures a penny and a quarter lower at 228.75, 244.25. The settlement price for your harvest month December contract. They were off a penny and a half today, and the March futures were down 1.5 at 2.59. December futures for next year at 2.94, down 2.25. September soybean futures up 2.75 today at 5.41.25. The November contract at 5.54.25, up 2.75. And January futures at 5.67.25, 2.5 cents higher. November beans for next year at 6.18. Up 2.75 for the afternoon. September soybean meal at $160.30, up $2.70 a ton. September bean oil at $24.54, down 24. From the Mercantile Exchange, September feeder cattle at $117.67.5, up $1.12.5. October live cattle at $94.52.5, up $1.17.5. And December live cattle 70 cents higher today at $93.85. Lean hogs at the Merc, October contract $68.07.5. They were up $1.52.5 on this Tuesday afternoon. Crude oil still trading. They're down 54 cents a barrel at $68.65 for the day. The CRB index at $327.11. Up 169, and the dollar at 85.04, down point, or rather up 0.3 for the day. Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,466, and it's up nearly 3 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Hi, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Let's talk about this marketplace. Pretty interesting day as you take a look at the numbers. Lots of green earlier in the day, and then corn futures managed to settle back for a loss. What happened?
Well, you know, it's sort of surprising to us, the overnight trade, of course, being a lot stronger in the corn because of the SC stone numbers and a few things going on, and the beans because of the higher estimates all along have been a little bit lagging. And, boy, today when the beans got down to where they tripped some buy stops, really surprised us with what they went up today and were able to hold their gains. So, you know, you saw beans down early, of course, with the crude oil being down and the bean oil being down on the day. But then meal sort of ignited, and along with the meal, then a few buy stops coming in and felt that last year 545.5 was the contract low during harvest, and some of them thought we were close enough to that, that along with the meal rally, why we pushed the beans a little higher. And when the selling dried up, why it was sort of a vacuum there, and they rushed on up quite a bit for a while.
Have we been able to get a tally on the day to say who the buyers were? Was it funds or commercials or both?
Well, I think In the beans, ABM Ambro bought about 1,500 contracts, and Kalen bought 1,000 contracts there during that little run-up. There was some commercial buying, but not to the degree that the funds were the buyers.
And that tells you that the funds are still thinking that the bean market has a long way to go to the upside, or are they just reinvigorating what their position has been all along?
I think that they're telling you they don't think it has as much to go to the downside, more so than way to the upside. I think that they're not exactly bullish right now, but they're thinking that we're closer to the bottom because they're feeling that the corn market and the wheat market are going to stay strong.
With trading range on the November beans for this year at 563 on the high, the low at 550.5, about a 13.5 cent to 12.5 cent, I'm sorry, trading range there. Pretty good range for the day, but they only finished 2.75 higher on the afternoon. How does that bode for the overnight trade, do you think?
Well, I think that, like you said, basically they closed stronger for the day but weak compared to where they went to. So I think we'll probably be a little bit off in the evening trade, Todd.
And as you take a look at this, we talked a great deal about LDP last week during the Commodity Week program and at Farm Progress Show. What are your feelings on LDP for corn farmers and soybean farmers this year as we actually get harvest underway sometime in the next couple of weeks?
Well, of course, depending on what numbers the government gives us a week from today, it's going to be we're not going to see the LDPs that we saw last year, number one. Number two, we'll probably have some LDPs in some area. They won't be large, and if the harvest is what FC Stone and a few others are saying, they probably won't last very long. So we're not really optimistic about large LDPs in corn this year.
FC Stone's numbers were right on, where were they at, 151?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, 151. They were just under USDA's 152.2 from the August report. And I suppose that and the numbers from Allendale, which were, I think, exactly the same with a 10.88 billion bushel crop, may have surprised the marketplace because many who watch USDA generally think that that August one is shy, maybe 800,000 or thereabouts, and it doesn't look like it's going to be this time around when they come out next Tuesday with the September crop report.
That's right, Todd, and that's why we saw some, just a little bit of backing and filling today, not knowing exactly what to look for out there. And also, if you saw where Dees went to 249.75, as we always say, that 250. It's resistance today. If we go through it, then it becomes support. But for right now, it was resistance today.
So what would you expect for the rest of this week? Will we trade just around the 250 level and not bother to move in much in either direction?
Well, I think, we're looking for Informa's numbers to come out, I think, tomorrow afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we'll take a look at those. We'll look at what's going on out there. But, we're getting, like I say, less than a week away from the government's numbers. That's the ones that are going to project things. And we're going to be listening out there close to see some of these yields, in some of the southern states that are combining some corn now and see if they're where they think they will be. I think that the government was probably a little high on their Indiana guesstimate in the August report, and I think that we're seeing that by the private forecasters now coming out and saying that, maybe there's a few states that weren't quite as good as what they looked like.
Tell me about the Mercantile Exchange. A lot of green on the boards there.
Oh, my gosh. There was a lot of excitement over there. We had a sharply higher cutout at noon. Cattle had new contract highs. Hogs hit new contract highs. We saw lack of selling, some fun buying there. Pretty good disappearment over the Labor Day weekend. The bellies were sharply higher. The funds were the buyers over in the hog pit, and then we saw cattle follow. Looks like the worst. They think the cash will trade this week is steady from last week, and the yearly offers are coming in $2 to $3 higher. So good movement there. It looks like we're the Packers a little bit short bought by the end of the week here, and looks like we saw some real strength in the meat markets today, Todd.
You know, how many years do we have the day after Labor Day, a pretty good up move in the livestock? Generally, that signals the end of the grill out season.
It generally is not what happens. So, we generally start thinking and changing our mind around a little bit for the numbers that will be coming in the fall. And so this is a little bit counter-seasonal.
All right. Anything else to add before I let you go for the afternoon?
Oh, it's just raining over here, and we'd sort of like to see some sunshine now and get these crops ripened.
We'll see if we can get Ed Geezer on board and send some your way, okay?
Thanks, Todd.
Thanks much. That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Tuesday afternoons.
The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. AM 580's own Jay Searles says tonight across Indiana, mostly cloudy skies, a few lingering showers in Illinois. Becoming partly cloudy, lows will range from 52 in the north to 60 in the south. Tomorrow, northeastern parts of Indiana, mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers there. Elsewhere, partly sunny. There's that sunshine that he was looking for. Highs ranging from 75 in the northeastern part of Indiana to 82 in the far south. Dave Dickey will be here in just a couple of moments to take a complete look at today's agricultural newscast. I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report.
In agricultural news, Japan's farm ministry says it is dropping a plan that would have allowed a tolerance of up to 1% of unapproved BT10 biotech corn and feed grain imported from the United States. Officials said the measure is now unnecessary because they have found no cargoes tainted with the unapproved variety this year. In a surprise move, the U.S. has blocked a request from Brazil for a World Trade Organization dispute panel on whether the U.S. has done enough to comply with the ruling in the cotton case. The net result of the U.S. move appears to be a delay in the process. Brazil can renew its request for a compliance panel at the next dispute settlement body meeting scheduled for September 28th. European Commissioner for Trade Peter Mandelson today says he will launch fresh consultations with world trade partners in the coming weeks to revive talks that collapsed in July in the Doha round. Mandelson will travel to Rio de Janeiro, Brazil later this week to meet representatives of the group of 20 developing nations led by India and Brazil, and then head to Washington later this month to meet with officials at the U.S. Congress. The Bush administration wants to wait for the harvest of this year's crops before deciding whether to increase the millions of aid dollars going to drought-stricken farmers. Agricultural Secretary Mike Johanns said Thursday he wants to, in his words, see what the combines tell us about the coming harvest. USDA is estimating net farmer income this year will suffer a 26% decrease because of lower production due in part to drought, higher fertilizer costs, and decreased government payments. Net income for 2006 is estimated at $54.4 billion. The previous year's estimate was about $73.8 billion. The figure for 2006 is also below the 10-year average. That's according to USDA's Economic Research Service. A South Korean delegation has completed an audit of several U.S. beef plants, but it will likely be several days before a decision is rendered in Seoul on resumption of imports of U.S. beef. A previous delegation visited in May turned up conditions at seven of the U.S. facilities that South Korea objected to. After subsequent negotiations, South Korea sent a second delegation that arrived on August 24th. USDA's Farm Service Agency announced new Commodity Credit Corporation interest rates for September, and they're down from August. According to FSA, the interest rate for 1996 and subsequent crop year commodity and marketing assistant loans is 6.125%. That's down from 6.25% last month, but up from 4.875% a year ago. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, up next, a story that I produced a few years ago, but really haven't ever aired on this station. I know it's a day late, but I like it a lot. It's all about the origins of Labor Day.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
I'm Todd Gleason for University of Illinois Extension with a history of Labor Day in the United States. It's adapted from a story found on the United States Embassy to Sweden's website. 11-year-old Peter McGuire sold papers on the streets in New York City. He shined shoes and cleaned stores and later ran errands. It was 1863, and his father, a poor Irish immigrant, had just enlisted to fight in the Civil War. Peter had to help support his mother and six brothers and sisters. Many immigrants settled in New York City in the 19th century. They found that living conditions were not as wonderful as they had dreamed. Often there were six families crowded into a house made for one. Thousands of children had to go to work. Working conditions were even worse. Immigrant men, women, and children worked in factories for 10 to 12 hours a day, stopping only for a short time to eat. Came to work even if they were tired or sick, because if they didn't, they might be fired. Thousands of people were waiting to take their places. When Peter was 17, he began an apprenticeship in a piano shop. This job was better than his others, for he was learning a trade, but he still worked long hours with low pay. At night, he went to meetings and classes in economics and social issues of the day. One of the main issues of concern pertained to labor conditions. Workers were tired of long hours, low pay, and uncertain jobs. They spoke of organizing themselves into a union of laborers to improve their working conditions. In the spring of 1872, Peter McGuire and 100,000 workers went on strike and marched through the streets of New York City demanding a decrease in the long working day. This event convinced Peter that an organized labor movement was important for the future of workers' rights. He spent the next year speaking to crowds of workers and unemployed people, lobbying the city government for jobs and relief money. It wasn't an easy road for Peter McGuire. He became known as a disturber of the public peace. The city government ignored his demands. Peter himself could not find a job in his trade. He began to travel up and down the East Coast to speak to laborers about unionizing. In 1881, he moved to St. Louis, Missouri, and began to organize carpenters there. He organized a convention of carpenters in Chicago, and it was there that a national union of carpenters was founded. He became the general secretary of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America. The idea of organizing workers according to their trade spread around the country. Factory workers, dock workers, and toolmakers all began to demand and get their rights to an 8-hour workday, a secure job, and a future in their trades. Peter McGuire and laborers in other cities planned a holiday for workers on the first Monday in September, halfway between Independence Day and Thanksgiving Day. On September 5th, 1882, the first Labor Day parade was held in New York City. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Well, with Labor Day behind us, now time to look forward to the harvest season. And one of the things producers might want to do while they're out there on their combine is to pay a lot of attention to how their BT rootworm corn has performed. The University of Illinois researchers have been doing just that. And for the second year in a row, they've tallied trials where the soil insecticides have performed well. Up next, we'll hear about them and how Herculex and YieldGuard compare. The Western corn rootworm studies at the University of Illinois have been around for years. Mike Gray is an extension entomologist at the U of I. He says this year, like last, the soil insecticides proved a formidable foe for the little below-ground insect.
Well, the soil insecticides did perform, I think, very well across our locations, and that was also true, I should point out, for 2005. So there are, from time to time, products that may not perform as well. In fact, we saw, for instance, Our Force soil insecticide treatment, which has been a steady performer for a number of years, the level of damage at Urbana was a little greater than we've seen in recent years. But I think with soil insecticides, it's important to keep in mind that calibration is obviously very important in placement of these granular products.
And generally speaking, Mike Gray says banded applications of soil insecticides provide better root protection than in-furrow treatments. There's an exception to that. Gray says those wanting to use Fortress should use it in-furrow. Fortress is a volatile compound and will escape if not placed in furrow, in the rows.
Regarding seed treatments, and there's obviously a lot of interest in the seed treatments, and one of the most well-known seed treatments is Poncho, and there's a lot of interest in using, you know, the Poncho 1250. This is the higher rate of that particular seed treatment. A lot of interest in utilizing it as a refuge treatment if you're planting a transgenic BT for rootworm. And again, I would urge caution there because we have just not seen consistent levels of protection with that particular seed treatment.
Now, speaking of the transgenic BT products, YieldGuard rootworm and Herculex rootworm both performed well in the U of I DeKalb and Monmouth trials. The YieldGuard treatment did not do so well in the Urbana, Illinois trial. The entomologist at Illinois cautioned producers not to read too much into that one-year, one-site statistic. Urbana, unlike the other two locations, is under heavy pressure from the variant form of the western corn rootworm that will lay eggs in a soybean field. Now, Mike Gray says it would be a mistake to average the Urbana data with the DeKalb and Monmouth trials when assessing BT performance across the state or the Midwest. The researchers here at Illinois, Mike Gray and Kevin Steffi, have been running those rootworm studies for years. And they say it's the U of I's way of giving farmers an unbiased assessment of how different products work to protect corn from the rootworm. These trials today, as you've already heard, included soil insecticides and the bioengineered products like YieldGuard rootworm corn and Herculex rootworm corn. Here's Mike Gray.
This year we were able to compare those side by side for the first time, and at Monmouth and DeKalb, both the YieldGuard as well as the Herculex rootworm treatments performed very well. We take mid-July root ratings and we follow those up with later root ratings in August.
Both of the BT corn products worked well in the University of Illinois DeKalb and Monmouth trials. Urbana was different, but so is the insect in Urbana. Unlike the other two locations, most of the western corn rootworms are a variant form that has been more aggressive since the mid-1990s. YieldGuard rootworm did not perform well in the Urbana trial. Still, the researchers at the U of I cautioned that this is just one data point over 1 year.
Well, again, I think I would be most concerned if I were a producer in eastern Illinois, east central Illinois, where there is clearly an entrenched variant western cornworm population. But you're right. It's one experiment.
One experiment in the east central part of Illinois where a variant form of the western corn rootworm has been extraordinarily active. The U of I scientists say those viewing the three experiments should avoid the temptation to average the numbers across the locations, DeKalb, Monmouth, and Urbana. Scientifically speaking, an average number would be misleading. You can see the University of Illinois 2006 rootworm trial results, by the way, for yourself. Just visit the U of I's IPM website and click on the link for the bulletin. The address is www.ipm.uiuc.edu. Well, up next, your regional newscast, and then we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Don Day about the weather.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. An auction for the right to sell electricity to ComEd and Ameren in Illinois began today, despite legal action by the state attorney general to stop it. The auction comes as a 10-year-old electricity deregulation law expires and price controls on electricity end. Ben Weinberg of the attorney general's office says the 1997 law assumed that competitors to ComEd and Ameren would develop, but that hasn't happened, so consumers have no choice of electricity suppliers. Both ComEd and Ameren say electric rates will increase, partly because rates have been frozen for a decade. The U of I's flash index of the Illinois economy continues to show the same moderate growth that it showed for the past 17 months. The index read 106.4 in August, up 0.3 of a point from July. The index is based on state tax receipts. Any reading above 100 is a sign of economic growth. Rockford is bailing out today, one day after powerful floodwaters submerged parts of the city. Many longtime residents called the surprise afternoon flooding unprecedented. People were forced to abandon cars, watch possessions float by, or wait on porches as boats were dispatched to carry them to safety. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich says state agencies have used more than 1 million gallons of E85 and biodiesel since April of last year. Blagojevich issued an executive order directing state agencies and employees to use biofuels whenever possible. Agencies average 60,000 gallons of biodiesel and 8,100 gallons of E85 a month. Illinois public health officials are warning restaurants of a scam involving the sale of posters directing staff to wash their hands. Those selling the posters to restaurants say failure to post them could result in a fine or even imprisonment. But State Public Health Director Eric Whitaker says it's the hand-washing itself that is required, not the signs. A conference this week in Bloomington, Indiana, is designed to show family members how they can cope with growing older while caring for people with developmental disabilities. There are about 15,000 adults with developmental disabilities in Indiana who now live with family members who are over 60 years old. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. On a Tuesday afternoon, we're joined by Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Kind of gray and cloudy here, but I see that maybe we'll get some sunshine tomorrow and later in the week. Is that the case?
That is certainly the case. We are basically looking at a pretty typical September weather pattern. Ever since we got done with late July and early August, the weather across most of North America has been trending to not as hot and a bit more unsettled, and we're certainly seeing that trend continuing, although we do see some warmer, drier weather coming, but there's still rain in the forecast over the next 7 to 10 days.
And how much rain might that be?
Well, it's not going to be widespread, not one of those everybody getting rains, but we are going to generally see half to three-quarter inch type rains as a possibility, but we don't see the better chance for these showers coming till this weekend or early next week.
The cool weather has slowed down maturation of the crops. How cool are we running under trend at this point?
We are.
How much?
And the trend over the next week will be for the temperatures not to be terribly colder than normal, but we're going to be running 3-4 degrees below normal daily between now and early next week, with highs especially by this weekend and early next week only in the mid-70s and lows at night in the upper 50s. So heat unit accumulation not going to be very good here over the next week. Temperatures actually over most of the nation east of the Mississippi will be a bit below normal over the next week.
And the important thing, I suppose, is that the growing degree days have to keep piling up for maturation to actually mature.
That's right. And if we don't get things up, this is going to leave us open, susceptible to an early season frost where that could be a real problem. We don't see that yet, but it's something as we get into the third or fourth week of September, early October. We'll be keeping a close eye on Canada and watching out for that.
So things have slowed down here in the Midwest and across this nation. How do they look in South America?
Well, they need some moisture. Soil moisture is not in good shape over the key growing areas of Brazil and Argentina, and the outlook for those areas is not for very much moisture at all over the next week or 10 days. So soil moisture down there is lacking.
And if you check in on the Chinese corn crop and soybean crop for me,
well, they're not unlike what we're seeing here. Precipitation chances look pretty good, but most of China's growing areas are going to see temperatures a bit below normal.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
I think that'll do her.
Thank you much. We appreciate you being with us. Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Tuesday afternoons. Be sure to listen tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And remember, you can go to the World Wide Web at willag.org and pick up all of the day's analysis, including the futures analysis, the weather reports, and the cash grain segments that you hear in the closing market report, the pre-opening and the opening market report, and Commodity Week. You'll find podcasts there as well as a newsletter that you can subscribe to. It's all at willag.org. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.